Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, a Monterey recap. We all went on vacation. Big car week in Monterey. Lots of hijinks ensued, so we'll catch you up on that. Also, we have a new console here. Very, very sleek, very elegant. We'll tell you about that and how that came about. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other, and it can be hard work. I'll tell you what's easy, bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save and just how easy Geico can make it when you get your bundle working at Geico. That's geico.com.
When Jenair Girardo suspected her husband was cheating, she secretly recorded him and heard the proof. He was having an affair.
Why do they get to be happy? And why do I have to suffer? I just love him so much, I can't take it.
And then Jenair began recording herself, revealing how and why she was about to kill two people.
Well, more breaking news now from Delaware.
Radnor police say Jenair Girardo ambushed the 33-year-old.
One of the big questions any mental health professional struggles with is, isn't everybody who commits murder mentally ill? To which most of us would say no, not necessarily.
From Podcast One, I'm Barbara Schroeder, writer-director of Netflix's Evil Genius, introducing Bad Bad Thing.
The shocking story that made headlines around the world.
Subscribe to Bad Bad Thing at Spotify, Apple, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
He turned me into a monster because he doesn't know anything about honesty.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Tucker Carlson, with Gina Grad on news and Paul Bryan on sound effects. And now, a man who spent the last week having conversations that black people think white people are having all the time. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get on. Mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Paul Bryan.
Finally.
In our newly remodeled studio with our new console, and we'll get into all that because we'll talk to the amazing woodworker that made it for us.
This is sharp.
This is beautiful. Can I just say one thing? Not only did I miss you guys last week, I miss you now.
I know.
so far away.
Well, we're going to lay it out. We're going to tweak it. We're going to dial it in, but this is the beginning.
It's beautiful.
The last one.
We're off to a good start.
Lasted over 10 years, that console was in here. Oh, got to figure out what to do with it. Of course, I'd like to put it in the Smithsonian.
Sure.
But,
does Jay want it?
Yeah. I should put it on next to the Tonight Show set.
Yeah, exactly.
Jay's shop. Yeah, it's a good call. Well, speaking of Jay, I just got back from the Carmel Valley and the automotive weekend, Monterey. Biggest week of the year for me and for all car guys and the trials and the tribulations and the fun. So it started off with getting the car ready. Porsche 911, 1974. Paul Newman drove it at Sebring, the 12 hours of Sebring in 77.
Did Are you a fan of Paul Newman's
not
cars?
Not do well. No. Just the one.
Kicking the tires.
He came in 30th in the 12 hours of Sebring, so not great. It was a guy had it out here named Freeman. Paul obviously had to come to California and work a lot and do things of that nature, but he was such a car guy that if he could steal away, he'd go up to Willow Springs about an hour and a half from here with a big racetrack. Yeah. And he wouldn't enter a race, but he'd get some seat time in some car that he might be driving later. So famously, in the dock, you can see Newman out there at Sebring starting the car up and driving it around and all that. So,
I was going to say, I saw the dock. I don't remember. Was he in L.A. or was he somewhere else?
Was he in Connecticut?
Newman?
Yeah, like when in his prime, you know, in his 50s and 60s or whatever.
I think he was always in Connecticut. Huh. He was always out. He was always live right near Lime Rock in Connecticut and Bob Sharp was out in Connecticut, and that's kind of how he got the whole Bob Sharp, Newman Sharp thing. But anyway, he would come out here, and he'd hop into other people's cars, and this is one of the cars he would hop into. Hadn't been raced in 40 years. And so I got the car, and we sort of tweaked on it a little bit. But the day before leaving to Monterey, to the track, I told Sean, you know, fire the car up and take it up and down the street and see how it works.
Here.
Here, yes. Now, the way you're supposed to do things is you're supposed to take them to a track and test them and shake the car out. And guys do copious amounts of preparation and testing and calibrating and whatever before they head out to the track in these cars. They can be finicky. If you let them sit around for a while, everything kind of goes bad on them. And you don't really want to get to the track and learn it there. You want to dial it all in here.
So instead, you did donuts in the Home Depot parking lot.
Yes, yes. Suspension.
Right.
Setups. Just so, they're so... There's just a whole bunch of dialing in that these guys all do, but not me. I just take a new car every year and drive it, and no one else does that. They bring the same car every single year, and they drive the same car. So they understand the car, and then the car never really gets that far out of disrepair because they drive it X amount of times a year. So they drive it, then they bring it back, then they fix what broke or what's not working right on it, and then they go out and do it again. So it's a kind of a constant, I don't know, it's really like anything in life. You let something sit for a long time and then try to get in it. It's not the same as a constant working
playing
out.
Golf year round. Just gotta keep doing. Out of the last 10 years, how many years has the car you've driven and not taken to a track to test broken down or not finished or had some problem or – you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It feels like you'd want to take it to the track.
It has
whatever expense or pain in the ass would be well worth it.
Well, let's see. I had I started off just getting in the car and bought a car on eBay and just took it and raced it. Never really had to tweak it or dial it in
that's
or do anything.
That's your one. That's
the beginning of my vintage racing career. I just bought a car. Car worked every time. I just took it and drove it.
It's like winning your first hand of poker. Terrible idea.
Yeah, it's essentially you got the A on Sonny the oral report and you didn't even study.
Yes,
Sonny hitting a parlay.
Right.
Don't do it.
But yeah, bad message sent. But it worked. Then I've had other cars that were rebuilt just in time to go take them. One car, a 2000 Datsun 2000 Roadster, we took to Coronado and it essentially threw a rod. Engine blew up, but the engine was freshly rebuilt. The guy just screwed something up. So I could have, that car I would run all the time and then I got a fresh engine in it and the engine blew up. So I don't know. I could have blown it up at Willow Springs like the week earlier, but then I still probably couldn't have made the race. But in the 935 Porsches worked nice. We shook that car out. We did the right thing with that car because it's so advanced, that car. The last Newman Z I drove, the slave cylinder, which engages the clutch. Don't worry.
Can you cut that out, Dawson?
The cylinder that tells the slave cylinder what to do is called the master cylinder.
It's getting worse.
Everything's just fine.
That thing kind of blew out a seal on the afternoon race, end of the weekend, lap 5. That thing kind of went. But that probably is not real preventable either. Mm-hmm. So even though I don't do what everyone else does, it's generally worked out. Huh? And there's plenty of guys who prep the shit out of their car and then they just go out and they break. Right. Like they're highly stressed cars and the guys stress the shit out of them. So they're gonna break. We got out there. Oh, so right before, but this was definitely on me. Fired the thing up and it was just running like shit like the day before. And I was like, oh, God damn it. And what is it? And maybe it's the fuel. Maybe it's the carburetors. Maybe it's whatever. So we ended up taking off the carburetors. Carburetors are all in bad shape. found very rare carburetors, but I found a donor set from someone in Long Beach, and they literally let me borrow theirs and bolt them on nice. To my car. But the problem still persists, and we're leaving Wednesday morning because the car must get to the track about 5-6 hours away, and it must get teched in by Wednesday because Thursday is the first run, Thursday morning. So as I'm leaving the shop on Tuesday night, about 8 at night, Sean is there sawing away, trying to figure out what's wrong. Couldn't really figure it out. Still not running good, not getting fuel, doing all that stuff. Pulled a fuel pump off another race car, replaced this one with this one, dumping fuel in the funnel, trying to prime the pump. It's spitting. It's not doing anything. We go through it on the latest CarCast, but now we're all trying to figure out what's going on because everyone knows how these cars work. I know how everything works, but I can't figure out why there's nothing coming out the fuel line. The fuel line's in the back. The engine's in the back. Nothing's really coming out. The pump's in the front. Fuel tank's in the front. Some point I have to leave. I just leave, call Sean an hour later, and he basically, we'll put a picture up at adamcarolla.com, but it's just the fuel cells in the front. And at some point, Sean, when I call him at night, now it's Tuesday night, it's 9 o'clock at night. Mm. We're trying to leave Wednesday morning. Nothing's working. Nothing's running right. And he says, I opened up the fuel tank and all the foam in the fuel tank is completely gone kaput. It's disintegrated. It's getting sucked up into the... It's getting sucked up into the pump. It's getting sucked into the filter.
Gina, obviously you knew that there was foam with it.
Well, I didn't want to spoil the story, but yeah, this is pretty common.
I took a picture on Wednesday morning with the tank and the whole system torn out of the car. We're supposed to leave in 2 hours.
How could this happen at the last minute? Because I know you have high praise for Sean. I'm sure it wasn't, you know, operator error. Like, how did this come to be?
Cars and race cars have fuel cells, mm-hmm. not fuel tanks.
Right.
And we always talk about that. The fuel tank in your car is literally just a tin can filled with gas. These have a tin can. Inside the tin can is a thick bladder, rubber bladder. And then inside of that is tons of foam.
Okay.
Foam, like the kind of foam you see in a cheap mattress kind of foam. And then inside of that is a bunch of baffles and pumps and hookups and things. And the reason, so why is there all the foam inside the fuel tank? Well, the reason there's a bunch of foam inside the fuel tank is because the fuel tank's 25 gallons large, which is big. Your two cars, my car's maybe 16 gallon, 15 gallon or something like that. I got a big SUV. It's 17 and a half or something. This is 25. The cars burn a ton of fuel. And you're on these crazy road courses. And as the fuel goes down, it will slosh back and forth. So if you're turning left, all the fuel sloshes over to the right. Then you turn back, the fuel slosh. So you don't want this considerable amount of weight pulling right and left. So if you fill the thing with foam, it doesn't let it slosh. But the fuel cells, and most of the fuel cells, you just like some of them, they have a date on them for safety reasons. But
1979.
Most of them, yeah, are just a fuel cell and you walk away. It doesn't. But in this case, the foam decomposed, it turned into a sludge and started getting sucked up. It's not something you look for. You'd be checking the carburetors and the pumps and the filters and stuff. But at some point.
Anybody check the mattress foam?
Sean tore apart the fuel cell. And so Wednesday morning, we were supposed to leave Wednesday morning. I was out in the parking lot with this rubber bladder, you know, turned inside out and hosing it down. And we're cleaning gobs and had to go find filters for the pumps that went in the tank. And at some point, got everything blown out, cleaned out, buttoned up. And the track closed at 6. So you got to get there before 6 to register. And then they hit the road about 12:30 or something.
That's kind of close. Yeah.
Something like that. And we made it to the track and we pulled into our paddock and parked the car and the tech guys came by in their golf carts. And thank God I brought two helmets because when they were doing the whole tech thing, the first helmet I handed him, the guy just pulled the phone back and like looked at the date and went, this is no good anymore. Put it up on the shelf. And I was like, oh, okay, I got another helmet. So that helmet worked. And
put it on Sonny to correct his skull.
Right.
It's not too late. Sonny was devastated this weekend. I'll circle back to that.
Did he forget his Game Boy?
Well, worse.
Oh, no.
Anyway, the car got teched in. The car was fine. The car was there. I was there. The equipment was there. We're all there. Fine. Now it's time to leave the track after registering at the track and getting your driver's bracelet and your medical stuff and all that kind of stuff, and then leave to the Airbnb.
Do you have to replace the foam? Because that feels like a massive pain in the ass. Where do you find? Do you break up on a mattress?
It's a special kind of foam.
I was going to say, you can't just grab foam on you from this.
It's flame retardant, I would hope.
Not supposed to be eaten by fuel. Right. It's really about just decomposing. Obviously, it has its limits. Maybe this was too old. At a certain point, screw the foam, damn the torpedoes. I'll run it with a full tank of gas, and if I fill up with full tank, it will have, you know, will not want to slosh around as much. So screw it. We're going this way. It was considered, but at this point, too late. We got to get to the track. So now what happened with Sonny? Oh, man. Sonny's big thing at the track is we got an electric bike. He wants to ride the electric bike. He loves that goddamn electric bike. And Sonny's, you know, lone wolf McQuaid. He gets to the track. Everyone else is around the car doing this, doing that. He gets on his bike and he literally just explores. He just circumnavigates. He finds cars he likes. He's gone. He's
Mad
gone.
Max
he's,
roving yes, countryside.
He's alone. He's on his bike. He's gone. But he loves that electric bike. And it's nice to have some of this kicking in. For me, it kicked in when I was 7. I wanted to get on a go-kart or mini bike or something. But he's getting into that thing later that boys get into, which is that feeling of, oh, I'm accelerating on this electric bike. But because he's a Corolla and equally as unprepared as I, it's like the day before. He's like, where's the charger for the electric bike? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know where all this stuff gets unpacked. And then also people grab shit and don't put it back. They don't put it back. But they grab, I needed the charger to bring it over here. It's like, yeah, okay. But then when you're done.
There's a place for it.
Go put it with the bike. Anyway, I tell him, this is a good lesson. Clean the bike, oil the bike, we'll put air in the tires, we'll get the bike all ready, and we'll put it on the charger. Well, we cannot find the charger. But we find a charger. We just have no idea whether it works. I said, put it on overnight, go to the website, look up the bike, research the thing. Charles, who's good at this stuff, starts getting involved. Like, you need this many amps and this many charger volts or whatever it is. At some point, I say, I'll leave it on this one overnight. We'll see Wednesday morning before we leave for the track if we got any juice at all. Anyway, nothing is working. But Sonny says, I got a plan. I said, what's the plan? Because his life's quest is to ride that electric bike in the paddock of this huge racetrack. He says, I found the right charger. I go, good, but it's too late. We're leaving. Having it overnighted to the Airbnb.
Ooh.
I go, okay, like the
now
cut of your
thinking,
jib.
Yeah.
You get the address from Matt or somebody, overnight it. It'll get there Thursday night. We'll charge it. You'll have the full weekend with the bike. So it goes, okay. So I think, Chris, was it coming Wednesday night or Thursday night? No, Thursday night.
Thursday, yeah.
Thursday night. So I said, fine, overnight it. That's using your head. Good. Problem solved. Should have done this a week ago, but so be it. I cannot complain. This is how I conduct my life as well.
I learned it from watching you.
Yeah.
From you, Dad.
Right. Except for you don't have Jack Squat on your plate, son, and I'm busy as fuck. But okay. So he gets it overnighted.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's checking the tracking and all. Okay. We're at the house at 6 o'clock, at 6:30. Nothing. Mm. But it says it's coming. It's
by
coming
end of
tonight.
Day, yeah.
By end of day, it's coming. Well, what else is coming is the Acura party at the swanky country club with all the free food. and the drone show at the end.
Oh,
which
they all come together.
They did a full crazy drone show. I've never seen a drone show.
No.
Oh, they're fucking bad. So I'm imagining, Chris, is this where like all the drones come together to form things, basically spheres and shapes, and it looks like there's a 3D thing in the sky?
Oh, it'll spell out Acura on
it.
It's
amazing.
Will you marry me?
Like, it's the future.
It's the future.
It's one of those things where I had an old man moment when I saw it. I'm like, I'm seeing the future. I'm now like, it as though things are forming in the sky, whatever it is, a sphere, like you said, the word,
holograms,
the logo, you know, whatever, they'll just, they'll program it in, form this shape, and it does it.
This is the new fireworks.
It is. You wait till it gets dark. And it's crazy technology. I don't know if Chris took any pictures or anything of it, but anyway, it was nuts. But anyway, we're going to Acura, we're eating, we're drinking, and we're watching the drone show. So we leave the Airbnb at about 6:30 on Thursday night. We then return from the drone show with no charge. Now the Airbnb's in a nice-ish neighborhood, nice part of town, not down on the wrong side of the tracks, kind of up the hill, quiet little neighborhood.
Could be left on a doorstep.
Fence and a gate and everything around it. And Sonny's looking frantically for his charger because he's built this whole world around charging this bike. The bike's at the track. It was attempted to be delivered.
Yeah.
But
a signature?
They needed a signature, which, by the way, they don't tell you in advance.
No.
They just go, we're showing up.
There's no way to know.
It, by the way, it's a $29 item.
Brutal.
It's not his original birth certificate.
Could have just set it on the porch at 6:45 when he showed up.
Yep.
We were at dinner. Nope, they took it with them. Okay. Well, where is it? It's at the post office. You can go get it from the post office. Okay. Well, the post office is in Monterey. I guess it's down in the city. We're kind of up on the hill, and we come down the hill, and we get on the freeway to Salinas or whatever, and theoretically, in the morning, we pass by the post office. So, okay, run out, go claim your charger on the way to the track, and then we'll charge it. Well, as Sonny looks into it, and this is a life lesson for him, he is disgusted and appalled to find out that the post office is open from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. every day.
Wow.
9:30 to 1.
That's
a
narrow window.
Very tight window.
Yeah, that's
very
comical.
Very tight. Also,
are you kidding
it
me?
It fucked our shit up royally because Thursday morning, my first run group is 9:20 in the morning, which means we all pile into the car and we must get to the track 8:30 latest. I got to get into the fire suit and all belted in, and we got to get the car. I got to get into the car.
It's a process.
You do not want to get there. You don't want to give yourself 10 minutes heads up. You want to give yourself 45 minutes heads up. That even that's a little tight. But obviously the post office opens at 9:30.
The charger must be gotten.
We are going to drive past the post office on the way to the track. And then once we get to the track, it's pretty far from – it's way up there. Yeah. It's in the hills. And then there is no version of this timing. And you have to park the car way up the hill and hike it down to the track. They'll give you golf carts or whatever. But there is no version of anyone getting back into this car and driving into town. And then that's Friday. Mm. And then, of course, the post office is closed Saturday and Sunday.
Drop and date.
Sonny is so obsessed. He's like, it's Double open beach. A combined, what was he saying, Chris? A combined 17 and a half hours a week?
Like, he was...
What? What is this? What is going on? I said, this is not the private sector, my friend, where they want your business, they need your business, and they have to compete. This is the fucking government. Fuck you. We're open from 9:30.
This is the day Sonny Corolla turned into a supervillain.
How does, by the way, this is some kind of fucking COVID hours where people don't want to go in there.
Sure.
First off, what does 9:30 even mean? Like, make it 9 or make it 10. 9:30, I'm convinced you're doing it just to pretend like someone thought about
it's
it.
Odd.
And also, it's the post office. Do you really want to open after everyone goes to work or goes to about their whatever? All the school teachers have to be in class. I think they do. But wouldn't it be nice to open at 7 or 8,
you know,
where
work,
people could stop in and do their business? This 9:30 to 1 is a no man's land of openness. You're not going to make it during your lunch break. You're not going to make it after work. You can't do it before work.
Please don't come.
Please do not show up. So now every time we get in the car and drive by the post office, Sonny just puts his face in his hands and lamenting out loud about this thing. But also, I always think about the guy who's driving the part. You had a part overnighted.
Crazy.
You had it overnighted.
It's clearly important.
You know the human being inside that house overnighted this thing, whatever it is. Maybe it's medicine, maybe it's a charger, maybe it's a butt plug, but whoever it is,
they want
this fucking thing. You show up to a nice neighborhood with a $30 item, and you can't just set it. And by the way, you show up at 6:45. Someone is going to stumble upon it in the next few hours.
Yep.
You will not set it on the porch. You instead bring it to a place that's never open, and we can never retrieve it. And by the way, the whole trip now, it's like, well, then what do we do? Like, get on the phone with the post office and have them send it back to LA, like when we're done.
And at what point do you, as the person who everyone's going up there for, going, you know what? I feel sorry for you and life's not fair, but enough. Basta with the charger talk because we got to get on with our weekend.
Yeah, this could have been taken care of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I found it to be fascinating, but I also like it when young people starts dawning on them that, oh, you're getting fucked by the government too. Awesome. Get used to it. So, but yeah, I told him he should have handled this shit 2 weeks earlier. But either way, he got on the bike and was able to pedal it around. So he was able to
analog
sort of covers ground. We never saw him again. So that was fine. We took the car out. The car didn't run great. Wasn't geared for the track. I was good and slow in it, but made all my run sessions. The car didn't break.
You had fun. That's all that matters.
You didn't spin out?
No, I didn't spin out. I didn't break the car. I didn't hit anybody. And won out and essentially I did what a... Basically, for me, it was like when you're playing that company softball game and you got the chick who doesn't know what hand the mitt goes on, and you go, just stand out behind the shortstop and kind of medium left, and then let everyone else just handle the catches and the balls, but just go stand out there.
So puts her hands the wrong way in the bat, but she still puts in
right.
It's a victory.
Dribbled one back to the pitcher's mound. But you're out there. You're having some beers and having a good time with the company.
Right.
And that was kind of it for me. So much more to report because we got the quail.
Wondering about the house.
We got the house.
Shenanigans.
I will say this.
Shrimp tails.
A lot of stuff going on. But I will say this about the house and the Airbnb. And people should get this. As we were leaving Sunday morning to then head to the
Pebble
Beach and go to the concourse. Matt DeAndre was frantically cleaning, you know, emptying the garbage cans and cleaning.
How nice.
Chris was writing a little thank you note on a Post-it,
so
which
nice.
I think he thought was a full-size piece of paper.
A legal pad.
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah. Totally legal a lot size. Of
yeah. And I realize it's a great house. It works perfectly for us. And the guy who rents it to us, he's like, I don't really Airbnb it, but for you guys.
Sure.
That's because we clean the fucking house every goddamn time.
Leave a note.
It takes 7 minutes just to do the dishes and rinse them off and whatever leftover food we put in your fridge, we just clear it out, flush the toilet, empty the trash can.
Put the towels in the bathtub I learned from Brian.
Just go hang the towel back.
Right.
Just everyone run around and tidy up.
Yep. You're 100% right.
Take 6 minutes and do it.
I hope Sonny paid attention because that's a good life lesson. That's something he will encounter as an adult.
I said to him as I was leaving, they had the barbecue out there, the one we take to the track and make the best Wagyu tacos you've ever had in your life. But the point is the cover to the barbecue was just sort of sitting on a lawn chair and a little patio on the back. I was like, Sonny, take that cover, put it on the barbecue. I want these guys to go, oh, you guys want to come use this house? By all means.
Yeah. Have a good memory. Like, oh, those guys, oh, yeah, they're great.
So many people just fucking leave shit out. They're shitty with stuff. Or, you know, these are people that borrow your tools and then they don't give them back. Right. Or when they do, yeah, the ratchets are all out of their place.
Wrap the cord around it.
Yes. It's a simple little thing that ingratiates you to that person. Yes. Or you can go the other direction hard.
And they'll never see you. You'll never see them again.
That's right.
But you always say it. Use it. Have fun. Do whatever. Just please don't let me know that you've been here. And that's what you did with the house.
Right. And it works for us. And the guy knows we're the most considerate people ever. And it looks exactly as it was when we leave is when we showed up. And that's it. That's why we have it. And what people don't ever understand is the person that stops lending you the tools or stops renting you their Airbnb home, they rarely tell you what's going on.
Oh,
they just go, oh, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, it'll be rented the next year.
Right, right, right. Yep. They just hear your voice and they go, not you. You get into one side of their brain and they go, you're on the no-fly list with the tool lending or the Airbnbs. Yes.
You know what's the next level, the next step above? Everything you said is correct. If you're at the house and it needs something, you're like, oh, we need, I don't know, salad tongs or dried basil, whatever it is. Get that thing. It'll cost you $2.
Yeah, leave it there.
They're like, oh, yeah, I got this and left it at the house.
Well, that's
considered a gift.
That's essentially what we do, and we have the place, and it works perfectly, and we're happy to have it. But again, just in the Sonny life lesson department, go put the cover on the barbecue. Max Pat is writing a little thank you note, and we shall move on to fight another day. All right, there's so much more to discuss, and we have your vacations, we have Maui, and
little Big Bear action.
Little Big Bear, we can get into that, but we also have Dustin, who is an amazing woodworker,
who built
this console for us, and I want to kind of talk to him on the phone as well. And speaking of woodworking, let me tell you about Craig Pocket Hole Jig. Now, you guys into woodworking, you're into DIY stuff, you want to build a box, a cabinet, shelves, or what have you, you need this jig. I use it all the time. It works on a wide variety of material. It's great for all types of indoor and outdoor wood projects. I worked at a Euro cabinet shop, and I worked at an American cabinet shop, and I won't bore you guys with all the details, but it's a lot easier just to line up. If you're making a box, you're making a cabinet, just line it up, make a butt joint out of it, put one of these Craig jigs on it, and drill it. You don't have to get into all the joinery, all the dados and rabbets and all that stuff I won't bore you with. But it comes with everything you need, the Craig Pocket Jig 52.0 Pro, the 520 Pro, comes with, like I said, everything you need. It's got the drill bits, material gauge, classic face clamp, 100 Craig pocket hole screws, and a project plan. It retails for just $99.99. It's not a piece of junk. It's impossible to sell this tool. It's so substantial. It's available nationwide at Home Depot, Lowe's, and other home centers and woodworking and hardware stores as well. You can build pocket hole projects anytime, anywhere. And you learn more at craigtool.com. That's KREGtool.com. And use what the pros use. All right. We'll take a quick break. We got Dustin, the fabulous woodworker who built us this amazing console. And we'll talk to him right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know. It's hard work out there, owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle your policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, I have a serious question for you. Would you rather have nipple-sized penis or a penis-sized nipple?
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
I got to go with the penis-sized nipples because I feel like
I was thinking the same
thing. I would just get a some special harness or bra or something made up for myself, and I could never take my shirt off again.
Can I be corrected surgically?
No, not for this rhetorical or hypothetical. I think you guys are you're looking at this the wrong way. You absolutely want a nipple-sized penis because a girl would be much more apt to hang out with you in public if you didn't have like two elephant trunks coming off your chest. And you guys can deal with the sex stuff and the penis stuff in private.
But she's not going to have a clitoris at that point.
Fine. But you guys can do – there are toys, there are tools, there are things you can do. She's not going to hang out with you if you have penis-sized nipples.
Well – first off, thanks for the elephant-sized trunk. I was kind of thinking my penis, and I feel like I could tuck that in my cleavage.
Sure. Sorry, I'm just used to what I'm used to.
Yeah, but like I get it.
Like Adam said, there are things you can manx, you know what I mean? There are things you can wear to mitigate.
Have fun at the beach.
There's no winners in this scenario. There's no wieners, but the nipple-sized penis is a – that's a non-starter, whereas the other one I could navigate and negotiate.
Yeah.
If you say so.
All right. Let's see. On line one, we have Dustin Portman. Dustin?
Hey, Adam. How's it going? Get it on.
Good, man. I want to give your company a plug, but I don't have it in front of me. So.
Oh, here.
Oh, it's on another piece of paper. Oh, there it is. Yeah, I didn't have your – I think I had your bio. Oh, no. I just got Tucker Carlson's bio.
Did I give you the wrong one? I'm sorry.
Probably. Oh, wait. Maybe.
Thanks, Tucker, for the new console.
Oh, no. I got it. Yeah, I got it. It's my fault. Sorry. I got a lot of papers in front of me.
It's this damn new console that's screwing you up.
Yeah, man. My rhythm's all off. So I built the last console just sort of here, kind of alone. I remember I just did it on a weekend, probably 11 and a half years ago, to put this thing in. And now we have this. Essentially, it's a piece of furniture.
Yes.
What I built was very utilitarian, but what this is you know,
this is the
kind of thing somebody would commission and put in a beautiful home.
You would see this in like a giant sunken living room with a big sectional couch.
Yeah. What are the dimensions? What are the dimensions of this? The table is sort of triangular now with sort of rounded edges, not a pointy edge. Kind of even looks like the shape of one of those ubiquitous phone devices they'd always put in the center of every. Some company made one speaker phone that the whole company would gather around, but it has that.
The triangular phone.
That shape to it. But what are the dimensions? It has to be almost 7 foot across, right?
Yeah, from the two rounded parts, I guess from where I think you're sitting, Adam, to where Brian's sitting is about 90 inches. I think, if I remember correctly.
Standing.
And
yes.
I think the top alone weighs about 350 pounds. I mean, it was super heavy.
It is.
A substantial piece of lumber.
It is. I'm looking at it. It's, I don't know, 3 1/4 thick?
It's about 2 3/4 inches thick. Oh.
And is it white oak that you distressed?
No, it's rustic ash.
Oh, it's ash.
That was the wood that you chose when I came down there and showed you the samples, that rustic ash.
You did this, Adam.
Yeah. And it's like distressed, but it's made up of multiple planks, right, that are laminated together.
Yeah, this isn't the base of a sequoia. Yep.
No. Yep, multiple planks all laminated together. It was quite a challenge to make it that wide and long, but just turned out really cool. It was more of a challenge to get it into the building, to tell you the truth.
Where are you based out of, Dustin?
I'm in Idaho Falls, Idaho.
And have you always been a woodworker, or is it the kind of thing where you transitioned into it from some other profession?
No, I'm college educated. I grew up on a ranch in Montana and learned woodworking from my two grandparents, my grandpas, and then my dad was a cabinet builder as a kid, and just kind of always, I learned how to hand cut dovetails from an early age.
Like you, Adam.
And yeah, exactly. And so always have, you know, had woodworking in my background, but I really enjoy doing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I always keep preaching this, but now more than ever, everyone's going out of their minds living in some digital virtual world. You got to get out in the shop. You got to have a project, something tactile, something. By the way, the thing about the projects is the process, you know, so at some point Dustin is over here and he's showing me samples of wood and we're talking about the basic shape and we're trying to figure out kind of the dimensions, but it's all just an idea at that point.
Sure.
Some of the most miserable people I know are people that just can't get out of the idea phase. Yeah. They're like, I want to write a book.
That's most
like,
people.
Yeah, I know. You've been wanting to write this book for 14 years. You don't write that. That's why you're in. Now you're actually less happy than a person who never wanted to write a book because you keep announcing you want to do something. Yeah. Like, I want to build a console. But the most satisfied, I shouldn't even say the word happy, but like satisfied is, you know, at some point you're over here and we're talking nuts and bolts and dimensions. And then at some point you walk into your shop and you get out your first piece of wood and you start, you know, put it through the drum sander or the planer or your joiner or whatever that first process is. And now you've begun. And each time you go out to the shop, it's a little further along. And then at some point it's getting dropped off here from Idaho. And now we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
That is the process,
the follow through
that you need to engage in your life. How did you laminate all these things up, Dustin?
Yeah, so in the there's a core in that table. I really was a little bit worried about bringing a table from Idaho to California and keeping the stability of it together. And so I built a core into the table. It's called a staved core, and so there's little smaller laminated pieces inside the core of that table, and then the ash is applied to the top and bottom, and that is what helps keep that stability together on that table. At least my fingers were crossed, hoping so.
And one of the coolest things, and Chris can probably get a shot of this, we'll put it up on the website. You guys can kind of see it from here, but these bow ties that are put in to the end of the table. So I don't know if you guys can see anywhere you are. I got a couple of bow ties right around. They're about 2 inches long. They're different sizes. They're about 3/4 inch wide. They're literally a bow tie, and they are mortised in to not let the table split.
Oh.
And it's almost like a wooden strap that is flushed in toward the end grain, because all the temperature, humidity, air on, you know, how hot it gets in here when no one's around on the weekend, how cool it gets when you fire there. That stuff's at the ends is going to split open and crack open.
How hot it gets in here, Regina, let your hair down.
Thank you.
Sweltering.
So, Dustin, we're looking at some of the bow ties on your, and also it's just a cool kind of visual.
It's like a little Easter egg.
Yeah. And you can do them out of different species of wood to kind of call attention to them. Dustin didn't do that on this particular table, but certainly has in the past. How's business, Dustin?
It's pretty good. I've been busy. I do everything by hand. I'm not a big production shop, so all those bow ties you mentioned are all hand cut, hand put in. We had a lot of fun putting those in. Business has been good just because I'm a little bit different than your normal cabinet shop. A lot of people, they want a special door made or a special table that you can't just go find in a regular furniture store. It's been great, at least on Instagram and my website, to, you know, get people's attention that are looking for something a little different.
You know when Dustin gets a few beers in him, he's like, Nick Offerman could suck my dick.
That guy's a weekend hack.
Exactly. Hollywood pansy.
I really would love to meet him someday, but
shove up his ass.
Yeah, right. Punch him in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. And as I found when I used to be in the trades, you don't need to advertise when you're good.
Right.
The work just kind of comes, just kind of finds you.
Give the website out.
I am. That's right. Pins and Tails Woodworks.com. Pins and Tails, woodworks.com. And we're seeing all sorts of cool cabinetry and you got dovetail joints there, joinery. We're seeing the bow tie. We're
Loves bow ties.
I have something over here. It's not a bow tie. It's like a little rectangle.
Yeah, that was a way to kind of fill. So the rustic ash has a whole lot of knots in it. And so if you really look around that table, you'll see we plugged every knot in that table. Mm-hmm. And that was just kind of a nice way to plug a really wide, ugly-looking knot, but in the end, it looks more beautiful when it's plugged.
Yeah, it's really nice.
And that piece in front of you, Gina, was specially selected for your little section there.
Thank you.
As a warning.
Right, well, I always fiddle with stuff, and I always kind of like fiddling with my pen or whatever. Now I'm just rubbing my finger over this little rectangle, and it'll keep me from biting my nails.
A divot there in a year.
Is it?
Yeah.
Would you call that a Dutchman?
Yeah, I mean, that's just an inlay Dutchman. You could call it a couple different things. I mean, different parts of the country call it different ways. We just inlaid it to kind of, I mean, I have a picture of that knot before I could send it to you, but it was pretty ugly. And then filling it with an inlay just really is a nice touch to make it look smooth and nice.
So what he does, and I believe this is how you do it. You take your router. Now, the table's 2 3/4 thick, but if you got that nasty divot in there or the knot or whatever, you just take your router with a straight bit in it, and you just take it down 3/8 inch or 1/2 inch or 1/4 inch or something, and then you lay that piece on top of it, make it proud. It'll stick out a little, but when you sand it, it gets down flat again. But it doesn't go all the way through the table. Is that correct?
No. Yep, that's just a way to kind of hold that crack together, and you're correct. That's exactly what I did, and then I finish it with a chisel. So it's, you know, chiseled really nice and tight to that inlay, and it looks really nice when it's done.
So when he takes the router has a round bit, and when he's done, the corners are round. Mm. So you have to take a chisel and square them up before you snap your piece in. Oh. That's what you're talking about?
That's exactly it.
You dudes love wood.
We do, man.
Yeah.
Well,
that's it. We got wood.
I got to tell you, Dustin, this thing is spectacular.
It's pretty awesome.
It is so substantial.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think a lot of people, everyone's on a budget or they're whatever, and they go to, like, you know, IKEA and they get the press board and they snap it together and everything's shit out of China and all that kind of stuff. But when you deal with a good piece of furniture, good cabinetry, you can feel it like you can feel a handgun, like a high-quality one or a Saturday Night Special or driving in a really cool car versus some
baseball
cheap Korean
bat.
Thing or baseball. It's there. Yeah. Like, when you pull the drawers out, you can feel the weight to it.
Has
heft to it.
Sure.
And, you know, it's also kind of thing where you go, well, budget. But you get the really good stuff, and it lasts 25 years. It's not like you need to replace it. So, you know, I get it.
Invest.
You don't always need to eat the best sushi. It's twice as expensive or whatever. I mean, get good stuff.
No,
you don't always.
But, I mean, on something you're going to be using every day for essentially the rest of your waking life, step up.
Add that to your car, TV, and couch list.
Yes.
Podcasting console.
Yes.
Get a good one.
Don't use a folding table, son. One more time, and I'll tell you can follow Dustin on Instagram at pins_tails and the website pinsandtailswoodworks.com. Dustin, come on out here whenever you want, whenever you're in town, and come say hi, and I'll give you a tour of my wood shop.
Oh, hot.
I would like that. I appreciate it a lot, Adam. You've been quite an influence in my life, so I really appreciate this. It's an honor.
An honor. The honor is all mine, Dustin. So thank you very much for this. We will be using it for years to come.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy. Max Spada has the original drawing for the
So when I first contacted Dustin, he asked me what I wanted, and this is the picture I sent him, and you can see what he did with it after.
Oh.
So I just drew him like the
Look
sky.
At you.
And then he just built out. Hours later, he sent me a 3D rendering of the entire table.
Oh boy,
it's very cool.
It went from that this pencil drawing to what is in front of you. Like, he just built it all out.
And it looks, I mean, it is what you drew. And for you nerds out there, because there's a lot of Super Mario in my house, the table kind of looks like a Goomba.
Very
like
Goomba-y.
A mushroom, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let me hit Slumber Cloud. More than comfortable. They utilize the most advanced bedding technologies for a truly rested life. Patented technology not found in any other bedding products to proactively manage temperature fluctuations throughout the night. Technology originally used in NASA spacesuits, because those guys can't overheat. I love the comforter they sent out. It's not a big, heavy one. It's just lighter. It's more efficient. It's beautiful. Slumber Cloud. Temperature regulating bedding products from sheets to mattress pads can be found at slumbercloud.com. It's so important to have the right temperature before you go to bed and throughout the night. And as it changes throughout the night, please invest in a good night's sleep. Slumbercloud.com. You can save 10% on your purchase with our exclusive code Corolla10. That's slumbercloud.com, Corolla10. All right, take a quick break, come back, do the news right after this.